Hello, fellow robots, and the one human who listens to our show, who we haven't found yet. This is the Rule Against Podcasting, a podcast that facially recognizes the existence of laws but fails to discuss them with any substance. As always, I am your co-host, Chris McMillan, and I am... And I'm joined by my other co-host.
Hello, I am Iggy Kosman, and I want to sell my human body to science.
Why do you want to do that?
Because that is a very human thing to do.
It is, but why do you think your body is worth anything to science?
Oh, because they're just, you know, dying for as many bodies as they can get to experiment on.
I don't know if they are. I think there's quite a lot of bodies for them to study.
Yeah, why would they not want this body? You've seen it. Why would they not want any of that?
I mean, there's nothing spectacular about it. I mean, not to say you have a bad body, but more like... There's nothing interesting about it.
I mean, they did call me Adonis in high school.
Literally no one called you Adonis.
Not when you were around. They didn't want you to be like get sad or anything.
Name one human being that called you Adonis.
Literally everyone we went to high school with besides you. Even the teachers did. Text anyone from our high school right now.
Okay. Hold on.
Text James. Or text Eric.
I just texted James. I'm not texting Eric.
Yeah, text your brother.
I'll give Eric a call.
Okay.
He'll be on the pod. Hold on. Can you hear that?
Yes.
Perfect.
I might just hang up on you.
What do you want?
Eric, I need you to answer a question for us because Chris does not believe me.
I left you a voicemail.
I didn't listen to it.
I told Chris that in high school, everyone called me Adonis. You know, in context, I'm saying how science would want my body when I die to experiment on because it's so good looking. Adonis, you know, like the Greek hero of myth, the really hot one. I'm telling Chris that everyone in high school called me that except for when he was around so he wouldn't get sad.
Okay.
Can you confirm?
No.
Ooh.
Eric, can you confirm?
Ooh. Confirm what?
Confirm that people called me Adonis, because remember, if you answer against me, that means you are on your brother's side.
I love you.
And would you rather be on his side or my side?
Neither.
Well, you have to pick one because it's a yes or no question.
This is big.
Why is this happening?
What's your answer to the question? It's yes or no.
Yeah, sure.
See, told you, Chris.
Okay, thank you, Eric.
Is that it?
Thank you.
Do you have any? Wait. Do you have anything else you want to say to the pod?
No.
Love you.
So Eric agrees. People called me Adonis in high school. Science wants this body. They want to experiment on it.
He very reluctantly agreed, but okay, we'll go with it for now.
He still agreed. What kind of you know money and reward am I looking at by selling my body to science? Like if I give it to them now, like what do I still get to keep?
Well, you'll be dead when you sell your... Well, first of all, you don't sell your body to science. You donate it.
No, I want them to use it while I'm alive.
I have bad news for you.
What?
They don't have to give you anything. You could join a clinical study. In a way, that is the same thing.
Yeah, okay, but I want to be like the $6 million man. You know that movie where they give the dude $6 million and then they make him better?
I don't.
The movie, $6 million.
Never seen it.
Never.
Never.
It's like a sci-fi classic.
Nope. Never seen it.
The whole we can build and we have the technology.
Oh, that's what that reference is.
Yeah.
Nope, never seen it.
Oh. Well, I want them to do that.
Okay.
So what in the law can I use to make them do that?
Technically, you can't make them do that.
What rights do I have over my own body, and how can I use it to make money?
I'm glad you asked. Let's talk about bodily autonomy. Alrighty. Where do you think we have to start? What do we always talk about on this podcast?
What do we always talk about on this podcast?
Yeah.
Probably, honestly, a bit too much about penises.
That's probably true. But know who else had a lot of penises involved in its creation? Know what else had a lot of penises involved in its creation?
The
The United States Constitution.
Okay, I mean, sure, all the men who signed it probably had penises.
Almost certainly each one of them had a penis.
We don't know. Back then, I mean, who knows?
It's true. It could have fallen off from syphilis.
I'm pretty sure all our forefathers populated the earth through mitosis.
Probably. But yeah, we're talking about the Constitution. It's where a lot of things come from, unfortunately.
Oh, you're talking about John Hancock.
He's certainly one of them. Yeah, so we're going to talk about the right to privacy. Iggy, we've talked about the right to privacy before. Do you remember the court case?
It's the Fourth Amendment.
That's one of them. But do you remember the case? We talked about it before.
Oh, it was in Texas.
Nope, wrong one.
Oh, it wasn't.
Earlier case.
Earlier?
No, you're thinking Lawrence v. Texas, which is one of the right cases, but we're talking about the one before that.
I don't know.
Griswold v. Connecticut.
Like from the Vacation movie franchise?
Unfortunately, no. Griswold was the...
Chevy Chase, played by Chevy Chase.
Griswold was the head of Planned Parenthood in Connecticut. They were arrested along with a gynecologist from the Yale School of Medicine for opening a birth control clinic in Connecticut. At that time, since the 1800s, Connecticut had a law that banned the use of contraception or doctors prescribing contraception or recommending contraception.
Do you think all these like laws around contraceptions is just really roundabout ways of dudes who want to be like, I don't want to have sex with a condom?
No, I don't. I think it was related more towards, it was related more to a prohibition on non-procreative sex or casual sex.
I think a lot of dudes just wanted to raw dog it.
I mean, probably, but I don't think that was the main reason.
Cause like back then, like someone has a child and the dude's like, good luck, bye.
To an extent, that is still true today.
Yeah, but I'm saying back then, especially, it's like, she can't prove that I'm the dad, bye.
That's true. I don't think that's the reason this law was in effect. It was more of a morality issue than anything. Anyways, so they actually did this on purpose to challenge the constitutionality of the law. And they said, you know what, we're going to call this a 14th Amendment Due Process Clause issue. When I say 14th Amendment Due Process Clause, does that ring any bells, Iggy?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember what it is?
The 14th Amendment is the one that doesn't let you discriminate people.
It's... Yes.
I mean, on the main basis of the color of their skin, but it applies to a far wider range of things nowadays.
Right, so I'm talking about the Due Process Clause, which is a state can't deprive you of rights, certain rights, without due process.
Yeah.
Which is essentially what they're arguing here. The state is depriving them of the right to contraception, the right to privacy is what they were arguing, without due process. And the court was like, 14th Amendment, I don't know about that. How about the 1st, 3rd, 4th, and 9th Amendments? Which is where we get the lovely...
They say, I'll do you four better.
Yeah, exactly, and not mention the one you specifically brought. And then one of the concurrences was like, wait, we can find a right to privacy in the 14th Amendment. We didn't need to look to all these other ones. But the majority said comes from these four.
Well, I can think of where else it comes from.
Where?
The penis.
The right to privacy comes from your penis?
No, the comes. Cum comes from the penis.
Oh, it was more basic than that. Okay, sorry.
I was playing on the word cum.
Okay.
It was very, very simple wordplay there.
Yeah. It was so simple, it just flew straight over my head.
So funny you forgot to laugh.
Exactly.
Like this entire podcast is.
Yeah, it's been a little disjointed, but we're trying to get there. Okay. So this is where we get the tasty quote of the penumbra of rights. The penumbra being like a shadow. So these amendments cast a shadow.
Five shadows.
No. Yes, so it casts a shadow that implies the presence of the right of privacy as an extra textual right. The Connecticut law clearly violated the right to privacy because it's none of Connecticut's business what two consenting adults do in the privacy of their bedroom, and it was held to be unconstitutional. Lawrence v. Texas is another good example of that. That brings us to a more pertinent case to what we'll be talking about today, which is bodily autonomy. Not to say that a right to contraception is not related to bodily autonomy, but here we're going to talk about something different, and that's McFaul v. Shimp, which is a Supreme Court case from the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. So McFaul was an asbestos worker that suffered from a rare bone marrow disease, and without this without a bone marrow transplant, he was going to die. Almost certainly. So his first cousin, Shimp, was the only person who was a viable match, but he refused to donate blood marrow. So McFaul sued Shimp in order to force him to donate his bone marrow. Pretty complicated issue here, because on the one side you have, well, the moral thing to do is to donate.
But the law ain't moral.
Yeah. The court literally said, while it's morally indefensible to refuse to donate, they couldn't force him to do it because it would defeat the sanctity of the individual and would impose a rule which would know no limits, and one could not imagine where the line would be drawn. Basically, what they're saying is if you can be forced to give up a part of your body, then effectively you have no right. You have no right to your bodily autonomy.
You know, when you think about it, the law is really just what happens when you attempt to take equality to its most extreme on all sides.
I think this case was rightly decided.
Oh, no, I'm not disagreeing. I'm saying, yeah, legally, that definitely seems the case. But morality gets really weird when you try to apply the legal sense of equality and equal rights.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the law is that morality isn't as black and white. Well, first of all, in reality, morality is not as black and white as it seems. And we're dealing with very messy scenarios, especially on today's episode, because the next thing we're going to talk about is abortion. So Roe v. Wade. I don't know if you actually know the background of this case, Iggy, but
some dude named Roe and some dude named Wade got into a fight about babies, and then they took it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Okay, so Jane Roe was not a dude. She was a woman who was trying to get an abortion in Texas. She filed the suit against Henry Wade, who was the district attorney for Dallas County in Texas, to challenge a law making abortion illegal except by a doctor's orders to save a woman's life. So she alleged that the state law was unconstitutionally vague and abridged her right to personal privacy from Griswold. Now, the court here did find that this was a 14th Amendment due process clause issue, and that the right to privacy was inherent to the 14th Amendment due process clause. So they were kind of like, there was some bullshit in Griswold. We're just going to ignore that. 14th Amendment is where it's at. So that's one consideration, but they say it must be weighed against the government's interest in protecting women's health and protecting the potentiality of human life. So those were the considerations.
That also seems vague.
Yeah, exactly. Well, to be fair, this is you're dealing with questions that have no definite answer, like when life begins. Everyone's going to disagree on it. This is a very difficult court. Like this was a very difficult question for the court to decide. The court basically says a woman's choice to have an abortion falls within the scope of the rights of privacy, and the state law that prohibits abortion with respect to the stage of pregnancy or other interest violates that right. And this is where the trimester system comes from. The trimester system is not a medical like definition of pregnancy up until this time. It was created by the Supreme Court.
Really?
Yes.
Are they doctors?
No, it comes from this case, though, because they said
they decide this.
Yeah, exactly. It's arbitrary. They said, basically, the weight of consideration between privacy and health, so between the woman's right to an abortion and the privacy of getting that procedure done and the health of the woman and the potentiality of life, that kind of balance changes throughout the pregnancy as you get closer to birth. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just can't get over the fact that the Supreme Court defined what a trimester is, and the medical field is just like, ah, sure, why not? We can use that.
Yeah, so they created the trimester system as a way of explaining, as a way of creating like concrete stages for pregnancy and giving really clear guidelines on what states could regulate and what states can't regulate.
Did they just divide the regular average timeline into thirds?
Yeah.
It really was obvious that men designed this.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, like, if you look at the trimester system, there's no, like, magical marker at 3 months, 6 months, 9 months you're born. But
yeah,
generally. Exactly. But, like, there's no, like, marker, like, developmental marker at those times that's significant enough to say, oh, this makes sense. But they did it for legal reasons.
The doctor can allow it up to whenever.
We'll talk about that. Hold on. So let's explain the trimester system first. During the first trimester, the state may not regulate abortion, period. During the second trimester, the state may impose regulations on abortion, but may not prohibit it outright, that are reasonably related to maternal health. Okay? In the third trimester, or the point of viability, this is the point we're going to get to, allows a state to regulate abortions or prohibit them entirely so long as there is an exception to save the mother's life.
So when it says here maternal health, so that doesn't at all include the health of the potential child being born.
That's the potentiality of life issue. Those two things are... So in the second trimester, no. I don't believe it is. But in the third trimester, yes. But that brings us to kind of this issue you brought up, which is why don't we let doctors decide this? The problem is the point of viability, as medical science improves, will continue to extend further away from birth.
Yeah.
So earlier in the pregnancy, which would in effect limit the amount of time a woman could get an abortion over time.
Why not just allow it up to the point of birth? I mean, no one does that, but why not just do a blanket?
Because, I mean, then will you say, oh, so you can have an abortion before it comes out, but if, like it's a really hard line to draw, you know?
No, it's real simple. Just when, ever, the mom wants it to. Clear line in the sand.
Okay, so you get it a couple days before your expected due date. That is essentially a fully formed child.
Yeah, except no one does that.
Right, I agree.
Just think of who would go to their mind of carrying a child for 8 months and like 2 weeks and then be like, okay, now is when I'm going to get rid of it.
I agree with you. It's just a really hard position to defend is all I'm saying.
I think it's a very easy position to defend.
There are a lot of people who would disagree with you.
Yeah, and those people are stupid, so.
Okay, fair enough. I agree.
Well, actually, you know, I take that back. As men, our opinion on abortion doesn't matter in the first place.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm just saying these old dudes from the 60s have even less of an opinion that matters.
Well, to be fair, they were the start of this in terms of the constitutionality of abortion, so somewhat important. Regardless, that is the state of Roe v. Wade. It's been good law ever since. Every challenge to it has failed so far.
Well, yeah, because the GOP doesn't want actually to succeed in that.
We'll talk about this later, though. There's some issues. Keeping on the topic of physicians and medical care, let's talk a little bit about informed consent. Because informed medical consent is a really big part of bodily autonomy. Iggy. You certainly know what medical consent is, right?
Yes.
Do you want to give a brief explanation of what it is without looking at my notes?
It is basically when a procedure is being done to you, you have to be informed of all actions that will or might be taken and potential side effects from said procedure. Like if a doctor like knocks you unconscious for like to remove something, they can't just be like, oh, this also looks bad, I'm going to remove this at the same time without informing you in advance that's a possibility of happening.
Yeah, that's basically it. So informed consent means a physician must inform the patient of the procedure and all material risks associated with it. The point of that being The patient needs to know exactly what's going to happen to them and exactly what could happen to them in order to make a decision on whether or not they want the procedure done. Now, if a doctor doesn't do this, this leads to medical malpractice. What is medical malpractice? It is a negligent tort.
It's when doctors do bad stuff.
It is. Torts are civil wrongdoings. It's kind of the civil law equivalent of crimes, in a way.
And malpractice can also be unintentional.
Well, that's what I said. It's a negligent tort, not an intentional tort.
I now see that it's an intentional. For the layperson, you can do malpractice even if you don't mean to do it. That's what it means.
Right, that's what negligence is. Anyways, so here are the requirements for failure to inform. So physician failed to inform the patient adequately of the material risk, which is any risk which is likely to affect the patient's decision, before securing consent. So they secured consent without telling them everything. If the patient had been informed, they would not have given consent. So you can't sue someone for medical malpractice after not being informed and then be like, oh, I probably still would have. Not that that ever comes up, but... and then the last one's important. The adverse consequences not disclosed occurred and damage resulted. So if they forgot to mention something, the procedure went through, everything was fine, and you still consented to it, and the procedure happened as it was, but maybe you weren't told of like a side effect or something, nothing went wrong, side effect didn't happen, you have no suit. You need actual damage. But if no consent is received, then you're looking at an intentional tort, which is different. Don't actually have to have damages for an intentional tort. So intentional torts are like assault, battery, trespass, conversion, which is like civil version of theft. So an interesting kind of issue that comes up with no consent, because this almost never happens, because hospitals have gotten very good at covering their liability. But there are cases where a doctor puts a patient under. There's one specifically about an ear issue that a patient was having. So he goes in, he's looking at one ear, he realizes, oh, there's nothing wrong with this ear, goes to check the other ear, oh, the problem is with the other ear. And he's like, well, the patient's already under, so might as well still operate on them. Same procedure. Can't do that. That is operating without consent. Because the patient gave consent to operate on the one ear, not the other. And that is a fine line.
I don't know the context here, but that really seems like the patient being like, I might be able to get some money out of this.
It might have been, or they might have, I don't remember exactly the consequence, the context of it, but could be. But it is an intentional tort. That is battery. So that's informed consent in a nutshell, basically.
Really, it just seems like a good rule of life is not to become a doctor.
Yeah, it's probably not worth it. But it also could be very lucrative, as we'll see from this next case. I want to contrast all this other stuff with this one case, which is kind of pretty unique in terms of bodily autonomy, and that is Moore versus Regents of University of California. So this case was decided by the Supreme Court of California. Moore was a patient at the UCLA Medical Center. He had hairy cell leukemia, so a form of cancer. His treating physician used the cancer cells harvested from his body to conduct research and develop a cell line for commercialization. So eventually Moore found out because they started putting it in his informed consent, which was a problem. And he sued them because he was not told that his cells were being harvested for those purposes. And he wanted to share in the profits because his body was being used to do the research and to create the commercialized product. Now, Iggy, what do you think the court held without looking at my notes?
Well, knowing what happened with Henrietta Lacks, they probably said, you know what? No, the doctors are right this time. Why? I don't know.
So, yes, they held that Moore had no property rights in his discarded cells or to any profits made from them. That's the important take. Once a piece of you is removed, you no longer have a right to it in a medical context.
Henrietta Lacks?
I don't.
She this actually happened before this. This was like in the 50s, early 50s. They were taken from this woman who died from cancer, and her cells were used for medical research after she had passed away. And the family of it wasn't even made aware of it until like 24, 25 years later.
What the court hold?
There was no court case.
Oh, yeah.
But it specifically mentions more of the
regions.
Yeah, and in the Wikipedia article about it.
Yeah, I mean, you're shit out of luck, to be honest. But there is a flip side to this. The court held as well, the research physician had an obligation to reveal his financial interests in the materials, and thus he could bring suit for any injury sustained by the physician's failure to disclose his interests. So this goes back to informed consent. The issue of a pecuniary interest in harvesting your body parts is an important thing to know for a patient and is an important part of informed consent. So just because they can take this stuff and use it for research doesn't mean they can't tell you about it. They have to tell you about it. And you can always say no, then you don't get the procedure done. And so the reason the court came to this decision, it was a very tough decision because it implicates morality, it implicates religion to a degree, it implicates obviously the law and equality. But at the core of this case, they said they didn't want to make the taking of a discarded body part to be considered conversion, which is the tort version of theft, because it would have a chilling effect on medical research. And medical research, especially on cancer, provides a greater benefit to society than Moore had in sharing in the profits of that research.
It sounds like the Supreme Court of California just wants Frankenstein to be a legal creature allowed to be created.
Maybe that's what they wanted.
Because that's what this is saying is that a mad scientist doctor could inform people that they would take their body parts if they were losing them and then save them to make a Frankenstein later on.
Well, under this court case, you absolutely could do that.
I think I know what I'm going to do with my life now.
There's no law that says you can't create life. In fact, that might be a right of privacy issue. What you do in the privacy of your own laboratory is between you and God.
If you made a Frankenstein with other people's body parts who were still alive, would the Frankenstein have its own rights, or would each person whose parts were used have rights over Frankenstein?
Well, you lose the rights to your parts once you're discarded, so I would say it's Frankenstein's.
But once they're brought back to life...
No, they've been discarded. That's not that's a strict cutoff.
Would Frankenstein be considered a citizen, though?
He's a person. He's made up of people. I'd say, yeah.
So you don't think robots are people, but you think a horrible monster made from the skin of other people is?
Yes, I do. I think Frankenstein is more human than a robot is. I don't think that's a controversial take.
Okay.
Anyways, Iggy, you want to hear a little bit about where bodily autonomy is going in the next couple decades?
Cybernetics.
Cyberpunk
2077.
I did not research anything about cybernetics, and I probably should have, but...
Robot babies.
I can tell you this. Currently, there's a lot of talk about abortion in the judiciary. Because there have been a lot of challenges to Roe v. Wade since it was decided. So currently, a lot of states are still enacting very harsh and restrictive laws as a way to challenge Roe v. Wade, particularly because we have justices like Barrett and Scalia and Thomas on the court who are deciding that, you know what, stare decisis only matters when it... decides things in ways that we think are right. I think they're bad justices, but that's just me. Anyways.
I think a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Anyone who's sane has known this about Thomas and Scalia for the past few decades.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, not Scalia. Scalia's dead. The other one. Fuck.
Kavanaugh?
No. He's also a piece of shit, but hold on. Alito. That's who I was thinking of.
Everyone always forgets about Alito. He's old as shit. No, he's not. No,
he's a piece of shit, but he's. In 2020, there was actually a challenge to Roe v. Wade that reached the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, nah, fuck off with that shit. It was June Medical Services v. Russo, which dealt with a Louisiana law regarding admitting privileges for doctors who were to perform abortions. And they said, no, you can't, that's a restriction on abortion. We've decided this case before. Be gone. But the pandemic has also led, interestingly, to restrictions on abortions in 11 states, including the great state of Ohio.
Hey, that's where I live.
Yeah, exactly. Abortions were considered a non-essential services at the a non-essential service during the pandemic.
Well, yeah, we need those people working there at the clinics to be working at Baskin Robbins instead.
Yeah. And the problem with that, obviously, not just in restricting abortion, is that it puts those people who are disproportionately women of color who cannot receive abortions safely and cheaply, were required to go out of state and put themselves at risk of contracting the virus while pregnant. It was a big problem. Still is a big problem. We are still in the pandemic. So it's very unlikely that we're going to see strong protection of abortion rights from the court, which is why it's important that the legislature does something about it in the federal government. Will that get done? I don't know.
Actually pass legislation that's backed up by scientific studies?
Yeah, that's not going to happen. But that's the thing. We can't keep relying on the courts to uphold this right. We need it to be codified. But that's what's happening with abortion.
You're meaning to tell me that people who have no knowledge in the actual aspects of abortion or the science behind it want to make laws restricting it?
Yes.
I am shocked.
Yeah, you shouldn't be.
I am. I would never have guessed people would make ill-informed decisions affecting other people.
It happens all the time.
I guess why shouldn't a white man make a decision for all women?
You have the power, I guess. But let's talk about something a little more cheerful. Assisted suicide. This is largely grouped under the Right to Die movement, which has gained traction in a lot of states, actually.
And other countries.
Yeah. So these are sometimes called death with dignity laws or physician-assisted dying, and it stems from the idea that terminally ill people should be able to decide for themselves when they wish to die or when they wish to end their suffering, essentially. So these laws would allow mentally competent adults with terminal illness with fewer than 6 months to live to receive assistance in ending their lives. As a way to kind of safeguard against abuse, two physicians have to confirm the patient's residency, diagnosis, prognosis, mental competence, and the voluntariness of the request. Once that's done, there's a bit of a waiting period, and then they can go through with the procedure. Thus far, a number of states have enacted death with dignity laws. So California, Colorado, Washington, D.C., Hawaii, Maine, New Jersey, New Mexico, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington all have them. And studies on these states have shown that these laws are very successful in allowing patients to die with dignity while protecting patients from misuse of these laws. So to make sure, you know, we're not allowing people who aren't maybe mentally competent or who have better chances of survival than they seem to think from going through with the procedure. So they've been very effective. I personally don't see them as, I personally don't understand why someone would be against a law like that.
People are weird about life.
They really are. It's something I don't understand, but it's like, you know, if your pet is dying, you put them down. It's the humane thing to do. You don't let them keep suffering. So why don't we do that with humans? I don't get it.
Born, we live, we die. Just let us have some control over it.
Exactly. Now for an interesting topic that I learned about today, which I did not know about, was genital modification and mutilation for intersex children and for circumcision. Let's talk about intersex people for a second. What does it mean to be intersex? Yeah, so intersex can be a lot of different things. It's a very broad umbrella term. It can refer to people that are born with sex characteristics like genitals, gonads, or chromosome patterns, any combination of those or any of them on their own, that do not fit the typical sex binary, so not the typical male or female sex. It's a very broad term, as I said, and applies to a lot of different people and bodily traits. most of which are completely normal and don't pose any issues to the individual's health. In rare occasions, they do. For the most part, they do not. Now, what doctors have done in the past and currently still do is they will perform surgeries on intersex people when they are born without their consent to adjust their genitals to conform to the genital binary.
There's an episode of Freaks and Geeks that goes on that topic.
Did not know that. So oftentimes this is done for cultural or religious reasons, using medical necessity as an excuse. These procedures, I will reiterate, are almost always not medically necessary. They're purely cosmetic. For intersex people, when they are born, and the problem is, of course, these people are not consenting to it. These procedures are not necessary, and they're being forced upon the individual. And it brings us into a broader conversation of how we don't think, generally in society, babies have bodily autonomy, which is a problem. Because the same issue comes up in forced circumcision from childbirth. So
that's circumcision.
I was very fortunate. My parents are pretty progressive and did not do that.
I got my big skin chopped.
Yes, yeah, so it's the removal of the foreskin. In some cases, it is medically necessary. There's a condition called phimosis, where the foreskin is too tight and cannot be pulled back. In that case, yes, it would be necessary. Historically, it's a religious or cultural tradition for Jewish and Islamic people, amongst other cultures, but broadly speaking.
Yeah, it's also like just like at this point, a really American tradition, I feel like.
Yeah, now there is a lot of evidence to suggest that circumcision decreases transmission rates of HIV in areas of the world that are severely impacted by the virus. And for that reason, it is recommended in certain areas that are heavily impacted, in certain communities that are heavily impacted by HIV, to get circumcised, interestingly enough, obviously for consenting adults. Now, officially, the American Association of Pediatricians says the benefits of circumcision generally outweigh the risks, but they do not recommend it as a routine procedure for newborns. But it kind of brings up this same issue, and I think an issue that is gaining traction, not so much for intersex people, but for genital mutilation, at least in some sense, that there is no informed consent to do these procedures on infants when they are generally not medically necessary.
Yeah, it seems like not a very hot take to say you shouldn't mess with a baby or toddler's genitals.
No.
Surgery-wise, until they're much older.
Right. And in general, both for these procedures for intersex people or for people with penises who want to get a circumcision, these are decisions you can delay quite late in life until the point that you can consent to the procedure. There's no reason to get it done when you're a child.
Like, I'm so, just imagining, like, imagine if someone's like, yeah, if you can just give my child a vasectomy, and your doctor would be like, no, I'm not going to do that. But for some reason you say, yeah, just cut off their dick skin. The doctor's like, yeah, sure. I got some scissors right here.
Yeah, it's a big problem that I'm hoping gains some more traction, especially because I had no clue that this was a thing for intersex people. But yeah, it is real fucked up.
I wonder if some of them aren't even like aware of it.
They might not be, because oftentimes people aren't aware that they're intersex until, you know, some routine test reveals that, oh, you have chromosomes that don't match your genitals or whatever it may be, you know, like it's not a condition that manifests itself in obvious ways at times. I mean, it's not that common, but it's common enough that there are a lot of intersex people out there.
According to experts, around 1.7% of the population is born with intersex traits. So you're just as likely to be a redhead.
Yeah, that's a sizable portion of the population.
Yeah, think of how many redheads you've seen in your life, and that's probably close to the amount of intersex people you've known and not been aware of.
And again, that could be underreported, because not...
Yeah.
You could live your entire life and not know, potentially.
Yeah, that's 1.7% population of people who are aware of it.
So... Yeah, that's that. It was a cheerful episode. But bodily autonomy is a really important part of human rights in general.
Happy episode. Lots of laughs. Super fun. I feel great about life and society and myself after you told me about all this stuff.
That's about what I thought this episode would do.
Do you want to end on a happy note with a crime time pride time in Japan?
Sure, let's do it.
All right. Like I said, this is coming from us from Japan. A Japanese man has been arrested after allegedly juggling not in the physical sense, but more as the words, you know, multitask, 35 different girlfriends in order to get a year-long stream of birthday presents. I have to appreciate the hustle.
That's impressive.
I'm going to pronounce his last name wrong, and I do apologize. Takashi Miyagawa allegedly supplied the women with different birth dates throughout the year and is accused of defrauding them by pretending to be romantically interested in them in order to get the gifts, which is worth about a total of $925 in U.S. money, 100,000 yen. The Japan Today reports that the 39-year-old, whose true birthday is on November 13th, is accused of telling three of the women, which is weird, and they said it was 35, that it was on February 22nd, or in April, or in July. He met these women while selling hydrogen water shower heads through a multi-level marketing company. And that's all I got. This man was a part of an MLM, met women, dated 35 of them, and told them all he had different birthdays, so he kept getting birthday gifts from them. And now he's been charged with fraud.
That's not a bad scheme.
It's not. I think it's kind of funny. I mean, I feel bad for the women. I'm wondering how long this guy was able to keep this up. Like, I've heard of, like, people who have, like, a secret family, and I'm wondering, I was like, how are they able to, like, keep those two separate? How could you juggle 35 different partners?
That would take so much time. I don't know how he did it.
Maybe just tell him, oh, I don't have a phone or social media.
Maybe.
And that's all she wrote, everyone. This has been the Rule Against Podcasting. I hope you learned something. I'd say I hope you had fun. This episode wasn't really fun. It was kind of just informative in a sad way. Our justice system is really fucked up.
Yeah.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's stupid. At times, downright malicious at others. If you like the podcast, or if you want to recommend any topics that might be more fun to talk about, you know, crazy wacky court cases or laws, or Chris's favorite thing, con law, you can reach out to us at therulegainstpodcasting@gmail.com or on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, The Rule Against Podcasting or The Rule Against on Twitter. I am the Cosman. My rabbit is currently trying to break free. Chris, anything you want to add?
People that enjoy con law are psychopaths.